Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers podcast coming at you. Can you believe it? We've got a week before baseball begins. The Major League Baseball season is upon us. Kind of doesn't feel like it, I guess. But we are talking Brewers spring training baseball. Milwaukee getting closer and closer to finalizing that 28-man roster to start the 2022 season. They will be on the road in Chicago at Wrigley Field to open things up on April 7th. They return home for their home opener on 4-1-4 day in Milwaukee, April 14th. All this stuff is going to be happening before you know it. And we got to talk a little bit about where this Brewers team is at. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast, and on the other line, it's not his podcast debut, but it kind of feels like it. It's my good friend, Kurt Hogue, the new Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He and Todd Rosiak are in Arizona, giving you all the updates, writing a ton at jsonline.com. My guy, Kurt, his first spring training, just progress report, Kurt. This is the first time you've been down there. You're covering the Brewers. This has got to be a cool time. How are things? I'm sure the weather is good. What is the state of mind for one Kurt Hogue right now?
Hello. Yes, it's good to be back on debut, whatever you want to call this. Things are going well. I got one day left here. I've been down here for about a week. And contrary to popular belief or the question that Freddy Peralta asked today, no, I am not Todd Rosiak's son.
Did he ask that earnestly? Did he actually think you were his son?
I can't quite tell, because Freddy is such a happy-go-lucky persona that I can't tell if he was joking or if it was an earnest question. I think it was a joke, but there's just this kind of charm to Freddy when you talk to him. That's like maybe he thought I was Todd's son. I don't know.
No disparaging to Todd Rosiak, because he's not old enough to be your father, but it's not a huge reach. You're a very young man. You're both very tall individuals, so I guess I could see it. Of course, no one matches the charming good looks of Todd Rosiak. You and I cannot compete in this category, as I'm sure he'd be the first to tell us. And so I'm not sure I see the family resemblance per se, but maybe it's just, it's possible, Kurt. It's possible.
It's the height. It's the height for sure. And we're in clubhouses with masks on. So I probably look like I'm like 19.
You look like maybe Todd Rosiak with hair. Is that possible? I guess from like, you know, with the bottom half of your face covered up. I'm still not seeing it. Are you taller than Todd? Are you guys both like 6'4", 6'5" territory?
I think I am, but Freddie said he couldn't determine it without a hat on, or with that with my hat on.
Got it. Okay. Yes, the Journal Sentinel will probably have the tallest beat reporters this year across the newspaper spectrum in Major League Baseball. As Kurt joins the beat, welcome aboard, man. It's great. Obviously, we are sorry to see Tom Hodricourt go. He was here forever and is an institution in Milwaukee. But he is enjoying the retired life now. He's moving to Virginia. He's going to have much better weather than we have here. I don't know if you're aware of that, Kurt. The weather here sucks. It's terrible. It's going to get worse as we record this on Wednesday night. But obviously, you are getting to enjoy the sunshine of Arizona, and we got a lot to talk about. I know that you've only been out there about a week and a half or so to sort of get some impressions of this Milwaukee Brewers team. Baseball season right around the corner. I think the first thing I want to talk about is, I think, probably the top topic in camp right now, and that's the way Keston Hira has been swinging the bat. Keston Hira has 3 home runs it's a 20 at-bat sample. Obviously, we're playing with small samples when we're talking about spring training. No one takes these stats seriously, but I will say this. There weren't a lot of moments last year when Keston Hira, even for a 20 at-bat stretch, was in a groove like he has been here in Phoenix playing at Maryvale. So I wonder what you think of it, because I'm not sure he's got a place on this team, 28-man roster and all. you would think they could probably find room for him, but it would be in a part-time capacity, and I'm not sure that's what they want for Keston Hira. I've got to think that they'd like to get him more regular work to start the season, so I guess I'd still suspect he opens the year at AAA, which might catch some people by surprise, but I don't even know if that's true. The way he's mashing the ball, I'm curious what you think of him. I mean, does it look like, you know, something, a switch flipped, that maybe he is going to be a more confident hitter, a better hitter than he was over the past two seasons?
Yeah, I don't mean to crush your prognostication here, but the position player group as a whole seems to be pretty much a lock right now, and he's very firmly in that group. He will be in the Brewers dugout on April 7th at Wrigley Field.
All right.
To the question of, is it real? How much of it's real? Who knows? That's the wonderful thing about spring training. But the thing is, he's definitely healthier than he was last year. And I'll get a little more into this in a story in coming days, where he talked a little bit about the elbow and how it impacted his hitting, which is interesting. Because if you remember, the talk was always about kind of how the elbow injury does he need Tommy John? How is it going to impact him in the field? And maybe the biggest impact was at the plate. If a guy's elbow is that problematic and he's having a tough time, you know, he has pain when he's trying to extend it on a swing, it's going to cause some problems. Now, I think there was a lot of other issues in the swing as well. How many of those are cleaned up? That's the grand question, because his mechanics are a little different. He's eliminated the toe tap, but this spring he's mashing against mistakes. He's driving when pitchers are leaving the ball over the plate, he is driving it and punishing them. Now, on one hand, you're like, you want to see him cut down on the strikeouts, and once guys are pitching, you know, on a scouting report and attacking his weaknesses, that's one thing. But also last year, if you remember, like, how many times did pitchers leave one right down the middle and he would swing through it? It was felt like a lot, right?
Yeah, a lot. It did.
So I mean, just that is a step forward for him, it seems. He had another double off the wall today on a fastball that was left down the middle, and that's what good hitters should do. And he has a chance to be a good hitter.
Yeah, we've seen him mash mistakes before, but like you said, it seemed like even that was few and far between in the 2021 season, especially. There were a lot of swings and misses. So you think for sure he's going to be there. Where is he going to play? We don't know for sure. You know, kind of who the first base rotation is, I guess. There's Rowdy Tellez, obviously, the left-handed swinger. Hunter Renfro, sort of I don't know if that's an experiment or not, but he's a right-handed hitter. He's playing first base. That's not a typical spot for him, but they had him out there today, as we record this on Wednesday. We know that Keston Hira could fill in at first base potentially. He's been tried out in the outfield a little bit. How often are the Brewers going to be able to get him in the lineup? It doesn't seem like there's an opening necessarily.
It's going to be tough. I mean, the designated hitter adds a little flexibility, but the thing with the Brewers lineup is it's like, I describe it as sort of a contrast, because it's a catch 22 almost in a way, because you have a roster that, if you look at every spot, there's an everyday guy in the lineup at every position. When Luis Urias is healthy, at least that is, which he will return to the lineup soon after opening day. But it's an everyday guy at every position, but it's an offense that's predicated on depth and mixing and matching pieces, because you've got guys like Hira and Mike Brasso and Jace Peterson and Andrew McCutchen and Tyrone Taylor that you want to get in the lineup. And you look at it like, how do you do this with all of the everyday guys if they're giving, you know, like Rowdy Tellez and Hunter Renfro the lion's share of the opportunities? Hunter Renfro played first base today, which, if that becomes a thing, that's one less spot, you know, for Keston Hira to go. If he sort of becomes the first baseman against lefties, who knows how that plays out. Hira is probably not going to play at second base. So it's going to probably have to come at the designated hitter spot, or if there's any availability at first base. They've tried him out a little in the outfield, but you look at the outfield picture, there's Yelich, there's Kane, there's Renfro, there's McCutchen, there's Tyrone Taylor. There's already five really good bats right there. So the path to playing time is not smooth, but these things always seem to work themselves out, right?
Yeah, that's true. And I'll want to talk about one of those outfielders, Tyrone Taylor, another guy who's having a really, really good spring. And again, small samples, whatever. But like Tyrone Taylor has always shown flashes of really excellent ability for the Milwaukee Brewers. And he's a guy who has not had a chance yet, not a sustained chance. He's had periods of time where he's been called upon with injuries and whatnot. But he's had his ups and downs. But he's a guy who's been in this organization for an eternity. And I feel like we're finally at a place where you got to find him. You got to find him at bats. That's going to be difficult because, like you said, Renfro, Yelich, Kane, maybe Andrew McCutchen as your fourth guy if he's not DHing that day. Those are four pretty talented veteran guys who are going to be playing a lot. I still think Tyrone Taylor is going to get in this mix. I think he might play some center field, or at least I would assume so. They need somebody after Lorenzo Cain. So, what are you seeing from him this spring? And I just got to think he's going to be a really big contributor this year. I feel like, granted, it would rely on maybe somebody getting hurt for some period of time. I feel like Tyrone Taylor is going to be one of the biggest surprise contributors for the Milwaukee Brewers this season.
He's just very steady. He's only been, I think he exceeded rookie limits last year, but he just feels sort of like a veteran. And just in terms of there's a levelness to his game and a consistency to his production, and he puts together good at bats and he hits the ball hard. It seems like every time you put him in the lineup, he produces. He's never, you know, the Tyrone Taylor that we've seen at the big league level has never looked outmatched in any capacity. I'm not sure the Brewers want to, you're comfortable enough giving him an everyday opportunity right now, but he can sort of produce his way into it with some injuries. And yeah, they need a guy to back up Lorenzo Cain. And he's pretty much the only other guy on the roster that can play center field. So behind him, it's like, does Corey Ray play in center field? I don't know who that even is. So, yeah, Tyrone Taylor, they'll definitely be cautious with Lorenzo Cain's playing time this year. And so he'll get a bulk of the time there. Who knows? Maybe this Hunter Renfro to first base thing is a move to open up more Tyrone Taylor in right field. And then there's a designated hitter, which he'll see some time at as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe Andrew McCutchen wants to hop in the Wayback Machine and play a few innings in center field. But you're right. That does feel like if Lorenzo Cain comes down with any sort of injury and Tyrone Taylor, for whatever reason, can't do the full-time thing, that they'd be a little hard-pressed there in that center field spot. Although outfield isn't really where they have the shortage of depth. You mentioned Luis Urias. He's not going to be ready for opening day at third base. He's had his shares of injuries in his, you know, short time with the Milwaukee Brewers. I still don't, like, I would say 2+ years, but it's very hard to understand. Like, 2020 is very difficult to compute in my head. So just
no, that
about.
Year that year didn't happen. I mean, that's
all right.
That season.
So, in his one season with the Milwaukee Brewers, he's been very good enough to earn the full-time job at third base, but there's not a lot behind him. And I don't know, with him missing time at the start of the year, I don't personally know who I know for sure is going to be starting at third base on opening day. I guess Jace Peterson comes to mind, but heck if I know. So what do you think the situation is at third base?
Yeah, Jace Peterson's going to probably be the opening day third baseman. Luis Urias is going to be the everyday guy. Mike Brasso can play some third base. And I'm just trying to rack my brain real quick. Pablo Reyes can play third base, but I'm not sure he's going to make the big league roster. Depends on how many pitchers they keep, I guess, because he's sort of a versatile do-it-all piece. But yeah, no, Jace Peterson will start the year there, and that guy is sort of a platoon with Mike Brasso to kick off the season. Luis Urias projects, I don't remember where I saw it, but it might have been somewhere on Fangraphs, one of their projection systems, projected him to be the best hitter on the team this year.
What?
It's not nothing. And if you believe that power last year was real, right, then look out, because you're looking at a guy who came up with, you know, about as high of a grade as a contact hitter as you can get. So if he's adding that, and he's also shown some improved plate discipline, so once he's back, he'll be it's weird to think of, but he'll be a big piece on the offense.
I don't know why I can't convince my brain to just fully accept Luis Urias as a starting third baseman in Major League Baseball, because he showed it last year. He was great. You know, I think maybe it's that early scouting report that he probably would project as a second baseman. Wasn't sure he'd had the defensive acumen, the arm specifically, to play shortstop. And then he's all the way over to third base. But as far as reaction plays go, the guy makes them. I mean, he made some spectacular diving plays, and there was always some throwing issues. I don't know necessarily if that's from third base as much as it was when he played shortstop, but he definitely seemed like a little bit of a work in progress, but capable, you know, like certainly capable of at least being league average, if not better, quite a bit better, in fact.
Yeah, the throwing arm's the issue there, whether it's in strength or accuracy from third base, less so. But yeah, no, you're right. He's got athleticism and he's got a good glove and seems to be good going in on the ball and as well as laterally. It felt like a lot of diving plays toward the line.
Yeah. I should just surrender myself to the reality that this guy is the hot corner guy. He's third baseman of the now and possibly the future for the Milwaukee Brewers. But like I said, not a ton of depth. You like Chase Peterson as a utility guy and third base probably, you know, you don't want to stick him there for long. So hopefully Urias can get back in the lineup as soon as possible. Wondering if there, because it is a 28-man roster, this year's a little unique. It's going to get pared down, I believe, back to 26 by May 1st. If I have that right. So it's not a permanent situation in which you have 28 guys breaking camp to start the regular season. But that means there's going to be some guys who make this team that I would imagine a lot of Brewers fans have not heard of. There's a lot of candidates for this. Luis Perdomo as a relief pitcher, I think, is one that jumps to mind for me anyway. Maybe Mike Rousseau, you've already mentioned him. So for those who have only been passively paying attention to Brewers baseball and especially the spring training, give me a couple names of guys that are probably going to be on this opening day roster that that fans may, you know, may not have considered before now.
Yeah, that's a very good question. A handful of new faces and names in the clubhouse, not a ton this year. And there's a couple of the, you know, the well-known ones like Andrew McCutchen, but Trevor Gott might be one. He's a veteran reliever who, even though he's never gotten quite a solid foothold in the league, a veteran reliever who closed for the Giants for a little bit in 2020. The bullpen always seems like it has some guys that, you know, just kind of come in and are anonymous, and then all of a sudden a couple of them pop and they end up being big parts. Another one of those guys in the bullpen, you've mentioned him, Luis Perdomo, former Rule 5 draft pick for the San Diego Padres. I previously knew him pretty much only for getting into a brawl with Nolan Arenado.
Oh, I didn't remember that.
There's a couple fighters, I don't want to say fighters, but a couple guys who got into some fights in the bullpen. Perdomo's looked really good this spring and he's a non-roster guy, but I think he's worked his way into a roster spot because he's out of options. I believe he's out of options after that. So kind of would make it tricky while a non-roster spot right now, they couldn't send him down after that. If he does indeed make the opening day lineup, but he's been very good. Jose Ureña, the recent signing, Marlins starter, pitched for the Tigers last year.
To keep the theme, a guy that I associate with drilling Ronald Acuña after Acuña had homered leading off like three straight games, and then Acuña had to leave the game. That was a big to-do when he was with the Miami Marlins. That's how I think of him, but obviously there's more to it than that.
Yes, that's sort of one of those situations, too, where like he gets the suspension for something that was probably not completely his call.
Right.
He was not acting alone in that regard, but he just signed and showed up to camp. And since he's on a major league contract and has no options, figures to be on the opening day lineup. So the bullpen always has a couple guys like that. Mike Brasso is the offensive guy who can will play everywhere. So he'll be in kind of an interesting roster piece to fit in, kind of the perfect Craig Counsell, David Stearns guy. In a way there. So yeah, those are some of the names. I've got another one that I might save for later. We'll talk about him later.
All right. This is a tease, right? We're definitely don't forget. Cause I'm going to be left in suspense if we don't talk about whoever this mystery person is.
He's on our non-existent show notes.
I don't know what that means.
He's locked away in the old noggin, JR.
Got it. Oh, I see. Show notes.
The show notes.
I get it. Yes. LOL. Show notes. Okay, the pitchers. They are the key to this team, and we know now Corbin Burnes will be the opening day starter. No duh. And loved Craig Counsell's quotes. He won the Cy Young last year as sort of a catch-all justification for why that call was made. I think it's something we all could have seen coming, although if Brandon Woodruff had been the opening day starter, nobody would bat an eye. That's another Cy Young contender. The Brewers are loaded as starting pitcher. We know this. Freddie Peralta after that. And, you know, again, small sample alert. I feel bad talking about spring training pretty much in any capacity, but It is notable that they've gotten hit a little bit. Brandon Woodruff has given up a couple home runs. Peralta likewise. Corbin Burns had a really great second appearance. Five innings where he struck out eight guys, walked one after the first outing in which he did give up five earned runs, in three innings. Not something we're used to. Obviously, these guys are just getting into form, and pitchers are probably going to be behind more so than hitters as we get into the start of the regular season because they haven't had that full ramp up that they're used to in the spring training season. So Brewers fans, I think, might have to be patient, given that they do rely on this rotation, do rely on their pitching staff. I guess I'd just be curious your impression of the pitchers, if there's, you know, anything to even remotely be concerned about, given that they have given up some runs here in Arizona, or if you just expect business as usual, the season starts and you get some lockdown performances from the starting rotation.
No, I think they're all pretty much in a good spot right now. Nothing super concerning. I mean, Brandon Woodruff gave up a couple homers a couple days ago. But was still getting into two strike counts and then kind of just missing some location with a couple of pitches. So, yeah, I feel like these starters are almost all maybe to this point at a point in their careers where you're not worried about spring results. They don't seem worried about them in the slightest. Maybe the one guy who you would hope to see some results out of is Eric Lauer, just because he's proven it the least, I guess. And he came out throwing 95-96 in his first outing so far.
Yeah, where did that come from? He added like 2 to 3 miles per hour.
Yeah, all good there. That could be another story that's coming at some point here.
more content coming at jsonline.com. Yeah, that's very exciting. Pitching the next great pitching. I don't know if they had a chance to get into the pitching lab this offseason, given the labor issues and all, but maybe that's it. Maybe that's what happened to Eric Lauer. He disappeared into the pitching lab and came out better.
Yeah, if I could have seen the pitching lab at any point, then I could give you some heads up. But that's like my life goal at this point, is to see the pitching lab.
Yeah, you're never going to see the
pitching lab. It'll never happen.
No. That is a closely guarded secret. It is a, you know, I don't even know if it's on this plane of existence. It could be in some sort of alternate dimension or something, Kurt. You'll never, ever,
the,
ever
the
see
the pitching
it.
Lab is Chris Hook's brain. That's
perhaps that's true. Do you feel like this is a complete team? There was a stat circulating, I think on Twitter, about how the Brewers were among the thriftiest spenders in free agency. They had spent the fifth least amount of money of any team, which on the one hand is kind of surprising for a team that is so clearly, in my mind, in the playoff chase. I mean, the favorite to win the National League Central again, as they did last year. On the other hand, they have a lot of their pieces already intact, so it makes sense that they maybe are just adjusting around the fringes, adding Brad Boxberger back to the bullpen, and Andrew McCutchen, we've talked about him on the last podcast, adding him as a DH/outfielder, so maybe there's nothing more to add, but do you feel like this team is missing anything, and if they are, what might that be?
I mean, I thought they're missing that big impact bat, but the way the roster is constructed, there's not really any significant holes. Now, that doesn't mean the offense might not underperform, it doesn't mean the offense might underperform. It could go either way in that regard, but the roster doesn't have holes. It's got guys at every spot. It's got depth at every spot that you feel at least decent about. But that was also kind of the case last year, and we saw what happened. It underperformed offensively, and then the playoffs happened, and we all know what happened there. So it's a pretty complete, well-rounded roster. You know, the offense really has no question marks in terms of who's going to make it right now. The pitching staff is maybe the best in baseball, and that will carry them as far as the offense will let it at this point. So maybe this is the year, I've said, maybe this is the year where they get a big bat at the deadline and give up some prospect capital in that way. But there could have been a spot maybe for – they added McCutchen. Obviously, that's a good bat. But there could have maybe been a spot for a bigger impact – you know, bat to put in that 3-4 spot every day, add it to Yelich and some of those other boppers they have in there, because they have a lot of league average good hitters, but not a ton that you're like, oh, this guy's gonna be a great hitter for them.
Yeah, and obviously some of that hinges on guys like Yelich and Hira bouncing back. I feel like David Stearns has never shied away from those midseason acquisitions. You know, we saw it certainly last year with Willy Adames and others, Rowdy Tellez for that matter, and then the year before They added Daniel Vogelbach in the middle of that crazy year in 2019. There were plenty of deadline deals. Drew Pomeranz jumps to mind. I mean, this is a team that is active during the season, and they don't go in as necessarily a finished product. And so far, David Stearns has done very, very well on midseason acquisitions, midseason trades. His track record is unbelievable. So I also keep that in mind. And you know, last year we saw Luis Urias did not start out looking like he would be able to be an everyday shortstop, and they immediately addressed it. They went and got Willy Adames to be that guy. Luis Urias ended up in a much more comfortable place and ended up being one of their best offensive players last year, so that was a fringe benefit. Oh, by the way, Willy Adames was essentially the team MVP. Previously, though, it's been Christian Yelich offensively, and you know, we can talk about Christian Yelich until the cows come home. The fact is, it doesn't matter what we see now or what we know now. It's all about how he performs when the season starts. There's now a pretty long track record of him struggling and being well below the player that he was in 2018 and 2019. I remember him doing very well in spring training last year. His numbers were very, very good, and it kind of thought, oh yeah, 2020 really was an aberration. 2020, crazy thing. He's back. Spring training numbers are great. He's mashing. And then it all went away when the season started. This year, maybe a little bit concerningly, his numbers haven't been that stellar. I mean, he's still hitting the ball. He's putting the ball in play, and he's gotten on base, but we haven't seen him hit a home run. So I don't know if there is any, I don't know what your thoughts are on Christian Yelich. And, you know, like, again, he could go 0 for spring, and he could also then be awesome when the regular season starts. But, you know, I guess I was kind of hoping that we would see him just tear the cover off the ball as like a real indicator. Okay, he's going to be much, much better in 2022. What are your thoughts on what you've seen out of Christian Yelich?
Yeah, I'm not sure, you know, I'm not sure we'll get back the 2018, 2019 Christian Yelich where he was otherworldly. But I'm also not at all remotely concerned about how he's looked this spring. I mean, sure, it would be one thing, you know, it would make people feel good probably if he was locked in right now. But the objective is not to be locked in spring. It's just to feel good. And he's had some good at-bats and put some good swings on balls. He hasn't produced a ton, but I don't think there's any reason to be concerned or anything like that with how he looks now. We will see in a month, 2 months, you know, if he's kind of putting the ball back in the air, hitting for some more power like he used to. I don't think he's going to get back to that 2019 level of production totally, but kind of getting back to the parts that made him what he was, which was driving the ball in the air and being very selectively aggressive as opposed to being a little more passive, I feel like, in spots where he could have done a lot of damage last year. So those are kind of the things to look for with Yelich this year.
One of the great mysteries across Major League Baseball is Christian Yelich. I mean, that's not just a Brewers issue. You can read a lot about him. Like, just it's just baffling that he fell back to a player who was not even as productive as who he was with the Marlins in the early years when he was just sort of getting his feet under him. And I don't really think there's anywhere to go but up. I think he'll definitely be better than he was last year, but we will see. That is a big, big key to what the Brewers are doing. If he struggles offensively, they will lack for some offensive firepower this season. So that's a big one, obviously. No secret there. You did get to see a couple of the younger guys, the next wave of players in camp today. I don't know how much you've even gotten to see them. Sal Frelick, I saw, got a little opposite field single, nice aggressive swing. He's a fairly diminutive guy, but he's very talented, very athletic, and I know he's part of that group of outfielders. Garrett Mitchell's in there as well. That next guy's up. The outfield is looking pretty talented. If you look at the Brewers roster and see there's a lot of veterans in the outfield, you know, just wait around a couple years because there's some pretty cool guys coming up the pipe. But is there anybody who's not going to make this team that you've seen that you've been impressed by?
I mean, I liked what I saw from Sal Frelick at bats today. I haven't seen a ton of minor league guys. It wasn't really until today and yesterday that the minor league guys were getting a lot of action in games. Sal Frelick was one. I just like the way he's got a good punchy swing. He's very small, 5'9", I think, but he's got good contact skills and gap-to-gap power, and we saw that today, and he hit the snot out of a ball that turned into an out. So you just kind of like what you see from him. Weston Wilson is an interesting guy. He feels like a name that has been around for a while. He's not going to make the team, but he's going to go to AAA. And if he produces, like he's produced in the minor leagues quite a bit. If he produces this year, he's a guy that we could see at the big league club this year. So There's just a couple names to keep on, but haven't gotten a ton of chances to look on the minor league side.
Do we know exactly? Is it Frelick? I think I said Frelick. Is it Sal Frelick? We need to know this man's name.
I wish I had the pronunciation guide in front of me. I do not.
All right. It is a mystery that we will continue to pursue because I definitely going to want to know how to say that guy's name when he's thrashing his way up the organizational ladder. A couple things I want to bring to the podcast this year, and we'll have Todd Rosiak on as well on a fairly regular basis, but I wanted to add a couple things like I've done with the Bucks podcast over at jsonline.com, the Point Forward podcast. We named it, gave it a new name, the Bucks podcast, instead of just the Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Bucks podcast. We need a new name for the Brewers podcast. So I am putting that out there. We're going to have to brainstorm you and I, Kurt, but also if anybody wants to offer any suggestions, this is a pretty big deal. We would love to hear from people. That can be on Twitter. I'm at JR Radcliffe. He's at Kurt Hogue. That's CYRTHOGG. I know you think it's pronounced hog. It's not, but you know, if that helps you mnemonically, whatever, you go with that. But, let us know what you think and let us know if you have a good name for this. And I am, you know, I would happily take somebody's suggestion and integrate it. I was pretty proud of Point Forward podcast because it's point forward being a term introduced by Don Nelson, the former Bucks coach, who was here for a decade and really kind of shepherded the franchise through some pretty successful times. He introduced the point forward concept, Paul Pressey, Marcus Johnson, and then forward being the motto of Wisconsin. I thought that might be a little bit deep, a little bit of a deep cut. I kind of like that name. The Brewers one though, a lot's been done. There's a lot of, a lot of brewer play on words out there, beer play on words. So I would happily use the hand if anybody wants to suggest anything. But also a couple sort of regularly recurring features, some things that we'll roll out here as the season goes on. But one thing I definitely want is to close down every podcast with a hot take from you. And hot take is maybe too strong. A take of some kind, something that we haven't talked about, maybe something that we don't know yet, something that that some observation you have. I just want to hear from you, Kurt. You know, like carte blanche. Give me your take of the week, spring training edition.
Did you just say carte blanche?
Carte blanche. Carte blanche would be a totally different version of you. No, carte blanche. A little Francais for you.
That would have been good if you had. Yes, we'll vary these in varying degrees of spiciness. But we'll get some a weekly baseball take in varying degrees, as I said, of spiciness. This week's, I'm not sure. You tell me how strong I'm coming on with this one. Pedro Severino is going to be the Brewers' most productive and best catcher this year.
Interesting. Now, do you feel that way because you think Omar Narvaez might end up playing first base or DHing a little bit more? Or do you feel like he could actually outpace the production of Omar Narvaez?
Yeah, no, this has nothing to do with Omar Narvaez is going to have a bad year. Omar Narvaez is going to get plenty of playing time and catch a lot. And he's probably going to be a solid, decent hitter for them like he was last year.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know what it is. Pedro Severino's at bats look good. The contact looks good. He's a big guy. Just looks like he looks like a ball player. You know,
the number of times I've made that mistake. Oh, that guy looks really good, and yes, then 3 weeks later he's out of baseball.
That is why that is not used anymore by many scouts. He just looks like he's got a good ball. But the issue with him for his career has always been he's just not been a very good defensive catcher. And if there's one thing the Brewers are good at, it is catcher defense, and they teach it very well. They coach it up. It's a skill for these guys. And he's been working on that a ton. The Brewers seem to be very pleased with his development in that regard. And so you add the bat, which can, you know, I think there's got some upside in there. And then you throw that into the plus defense that he, you know, if he's just an average defender, maybe. I just like Pedro Severino, I guess, is where we're going with this.
Like, as you mentioned, Omar Narvaez came to Milwaukee with a reputation of being all bat, no glove, and wound up being very reliable defensively and not offensively in 2020. And then 2021, he added the bat right back into it and had a very good year, made the all-star team, scuffled a little bit in the second half, but still was one of their more productive players for the bulk of the season offensively. And it isn't just Omar. They've had some success. Of course, Manny Pena is now with Atlanta. So they've signed Pedro Severino. in the offseason from Baltimore, and I think it could be interesting for sure. I don't think that's super spicy. I still probably would imagine Omar Narváez is the more productive guy over the course of the year, just purely based on he's going to get a lot more opportunities, at least in the first half of the season. But yeah, I think I would not be surprised to see them convert Pedro Severino into a pretty productive player. And you know, Manny Pena is kind of a good success story too. He was sort of a low level minor league player when they acquired him from for K-Rod in a trade with the Tigers, and he worked, you know, came up pretty quickly and was pretty solid, you know, solid for several years with the Brewers. He was one of their longest tenured players by the time he left. So yeah, they've had success in the catching ranks, I would say. All right, Kurt, I think that does it for this edition. We'll have another one. We'll have to do one before the season begins on April 7th. I'm going to try to get both you and Todd Rosiak on the line, and we will preview the season, preview the first couple series. I'll be going to Baltimore, speaking of which, right after they end up in Chicago, and it's going to be interesting. You know, the like I said, baseball's coming for everybody a lot sooner than I think people realize. We are just a week away. Any last thoughts, Kurt, before I let you go back into the Arizona sun?
I just can't believe that baseball season is a week away. It feels like this has been such an abbreviated spring training that there's not been a lot of time to realize like, oh goodness gracious, like there's a regular season and it is right on the doorstep. So I'm looking forward to next Thursday already being down at Wrigley Field for Corbin Burns against Seven Cups announcer Marcus Stroman. I'm guessing that's going to be the guy.
You know, I have not seen that. I don't know who their opening day starter was. Was it Hendricks last year? I think it was Hendricks last year.
It could be Hendricks again. I mean, I could see them going that way. Stroman's probably the best pitcher there. But Brewers-Cubs at Wrigley opening day, that sounds like a great way to kick off the season.
Yes. Brings back to mind the 2008 opener. I know I have a list of great opening day moments that we produced a couple years ago that's going to be republishing. The 2008 opener at Wrigley Field, an absolute insane, insane game in the rain. Ben Sheets, Kosuke Fukudome had a home run to tie the game against Eric Gagne. The Brewers battle back to win in extras. Gross weather, but a very, very memorable occasion. And, you know, it's always good to start the year with the Cubs. That's the way it's supposed to be. The Milwaukee Brewers and Cubs will be getting going April 7th. We will have one more podcast before we get there. Thanks for joining us, Kurt. We will chat with you again very soon.
All right, JR. Talk to you later.
Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. We'll be back on your phone here in a couple days to preview the season and give one last look before we send you off into the 2022 Major League Baseball season. Thanks for joining us, everybody. We will chat with you again very soon. Bye-bye.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.